Our first speaker probably needs no introduction, but I'll introduce him anyway. It's Steve Smolian, and as he told me in an email just the other day, he's done a lot of stuff. He says more details on exactly what he's done tomorrow when he's introduced as a member of the morning panel next door. So we'll keep this one short. Related to this presentation, he's been a member of the Music Library Association since 1961, and from 1969 through 1972, he operated Cards for Records, a service for libraries. His presentation this morning is titled Beyond the Card, What Professional Sound Recording Cataloging Could Tell Us, But Doesn't. So, Steve Smolian.
Save it for later. We're going to need it. There will be a text of this presentation available online from Dropbox after Andy's presentation. I'll have these to give away, which will have the address on it, and it will also be out on the distribution table in the course of the conference, so you can get a printout if you so desire. There's now a 125-year accumulation. How am I doing? Is that better? Okay. There's now a 125-year accumulation of commercial moving image and sound recordings. Fun stuff, to be sure, but also powerful research tools. Denied those probing the cultures of earlier centuries. Finding a specific item among the information-holding objects and sound files means identifying their content as well as their container and external label and the desired audio or movie within it. It probably began with stone tablets. Now, where do we put Commandments 11 through 20? Through manuscripts to multimedia, from being finite things stored in a fixed location to ones and zeros tethered to the cloud. Keeping track of that content has evolved from, depending on the librarian's memory, as many private collectors are still in that stage, to hunt and peek shelf organization through rules designed to systematically create and place data on a typed card, to adopting those rules to best interact with a computer screen. The media such systems encompass has expanded from only retrieving data about information formatted as words on a page to dealing with printed music, which is encoded sound, to audio and moving image holders that require an interposed technology to function. The solution to merging each such development with this system has been to graft new rules onto those devised to identify, classify, and locate books and manuscripts. I contend that it functions best when developed by working from the most complex to the least, rather than the reverse. Here, then, is my vision of one such system, ignoring whether segments of it already exist or may be in discussion elsewhere. The thinking machine does things efficiently that the card catalog did poorly or not at all. It can work comfortably in all languages and alphabets. It has the ability to calculate, and it can move information around to create contextual relationships. So let's feed it the diet it needs to do so. One goal of library cataloging was to define those elements of information required to identify each recording uniquely and to locate it. That the 3x5 could do. Further developments led to the digitized catalog card, adding more data and allowing some additional search functions, but space limits no longer exist. The data frame can now include fields that allow entering all that is factual about the recording. The basics remain the basics, but further information to be added as compiled vastly expands the computer's potential to organize and calculate, and thus better serve its base of users. It is no longer a tool for libraries only. The need for each patron to repeat the same additional steps as earlier ones to find the same factual information not in the cataloging record is a waste of brain power. This goal requires rethinking which attributes of each type of information make it best suited for manipulation within a computerized environment. Complex media require imposed technology. The same fields renamed can be used for those needed to catalog DVDs, VHS, film, etc., so long as the results do not interfere with interfiling them all. For this presentation, I'll mark the checkbox that brings up those for sound recordings. The internet has grown into an interactive, overstuffed Sam Goody's. A particular recording is often available in a variety of formats and sound qualities, and from numerous sources. Media cataloging should now be finding out what's out there, indicating how complex it is, if it is compressed, lossy, etc., and how to access it with some indication of the accessibility of each through the organization or individual whose catalog it is. Consumers should know their options when deciding what to obtain and or hear. A generic Beethoven Fifth for educational purposes values clarity and observation of the composer's instructions over interpretation. But for the study of its interpretive possibilities viewed over time, every recording of that work becomes subject to a sifting and filtering process. In this regard, institutional needs are coinciding with those of the private researcher as the world's recorded legacy is increasingly recognized as an essential resource for study as well as for enjoyment. Every performance will be online, where copyright and or arrangement or agreement permits, and sometimes not. This is already underway. There was an attitude once common in library circles, we'll lead them to the item, but we won't do their work for them. Properly fed and instructed, the computer can now uncover formerly obscured research maps that the expansion of data allows. The basic information is the same for any issue in any format that begins as a recording event. It needs to be researched and written down only once. It can be then shared with all users and configured to the needs of each. There will still be fields that are important only to an institution and those that are more so to a private user. They should all be included in the cataloging package so that each can select those elements required to construct his own catalog. Many data elements can be considered universally known, others less so, but important nonetheless. I'll mention a few based in part on my own experience as an appraiser and dealer, as some indicate what has become important to some of today's lay users, of which the academic community may be only vaguely aware. All dates throughout should be entered into fields that allow calculation. That's an important rule. The universe of sound recordings can be divided three ways: born magnetic, born digital, and of course, born groovy. We start with the intangible recording. The recording event, its location and its date, participants, musicians, producer, recording engineer. The carriers. Where the recording is on or embedded into a tangible object, the item's condition should be part of the description. The savings in time, not having to check every further copy received against what is already on the shelf, is enormous. Label scans must be included, and a linked reference site devoted to preferred label designs and why they are so should be created. A numerical grading system that is computer friendly should be agreed upon, perhaps starting from 10 down, in part to allow average conditions to be calculated. Or for a subset, if you want to know how, what all your Ella Fitzgerald 78s are average in condition before transferring, you have an idea. Professional catalogers who don't know how to grade should be trained to do this. A note describing the nature of defects should be included, as this helps when choosing the best copy for dubbing. A field that includes preservation priorities is also important. Country of manufacture. All pressings and CDs made by international conglomerates vary in quality by country of manufacture and time of manufacture. As an Amazon dealer, I average a couple of inquiries a month from potential CD customers to whom this is a consideration in their buying decisions. Factors include the country of manufacture as stated on the disc rather than in the booklet, and the presence or absence of printed barcode and the UPC is used in the United States and the longer one used worldwide. The collecting rules for this medium are still in flux. Packaging. Cover design by, photos by, art by, liner notes by. Have you seen the prices for records with Warhol covers made during his days as a commercial artist? They can be pretty substantial. What was recorded? The names of all compositions, people, and titles should be in their original language and in the original alphabet. A lesson now learned by government security systems. The user can then pick the translation, transliteration he chooses as a default, but this only works when the original text underlies that choice. Composers. Identifying the composer is always essential as there are multiple large works and individual songs using the same title. Titles cannot be copywritten. Imagine if Symphony No. 1 were copywritten. One spelling of a composer's name would be designated as standard, what I call the Ur name. Each user can then choose the alphabet and spelling using that alphabet that he chooses. This can be done on a case-by-case basis or by using a data file of accepted spellings for a large group of names, say, as spelled in Schwann, whatever that was. Title. The primary title is assigned to a work. Here, I call it the Ur title. Alternative titles can be added or selected as the one the user picks as his default, again, either individually or as a group. Similarly, as with composers, this should include both the date and the composition was completed and the first printed publication. Alternate titles can be added at any time. The user can choose his preferred style of titling, language, etc., but it always ties back to that Ur title, visible or hidden. Nicknames in original or other languages, particularly as used on records, would be included. Performance. The date of first performance and list of performers can link to any who may also have been included in a given recording. This is especially important when a work was composed just before or during the recording era. Performers. The group name and group members at the time of recording should be specified with the date of birth of each or each significant performer. For pseudonyms, through 1942, Alan Sutton's book on this topic covers U.S. performers. I assume similar work has been done or is underway for the remainder. History of the recording. The date of first release and its initial commercial format is important. A record exerts no influence until it can be heard. Additional data would add the format of the original issue and how to identify it, as well as references to subsequent and derived issues, segments, or compilations. History of the copy being cataloged, date obtained from, and if purchased, the amount paid, if donated, by whom. Born Groovy One. This covers all commercial cylinders and most 78s. Matrix and take numbers should be divided into each component of the code, prefix, number, and suffix, as well as take number, letter, and suffix to that. Prioritization of the elements of these components varies from series to series and company to company, and will be a sequence used by a particular recording company at the time the record was made. When there is more than one choice, there should be options to help the user approve the proper one for the recording being entered, as that employs a matching process that presents the most likely data sequence with a default, "Do you mean this?" Creating a list organized by matrix number then becomes a tool to approximate recording dates when specific ones are lacking and identifying performers who may be identified for one matrix intake but not on an adjoining one or on one edition of a record where it is not on the other, and Andy will have something to say about that. It also calls attention to gaps when looking for unpublished selections. Include the recording date, time span of days required to complete the recording, city and location within that city, mono, stereo, digital, electronic stereo, etc. You'll want the nominal speed and timing at that speed, and the actual playing speed, toggle between number and percent as an option, and timing at that speed. Album inserts should be listed, including lyric sleeves, advertising sleeves, posters, consumer response cards, etc., if such there be. Born Groovy 2, instantaneous recordings. Home recordings, concert recordings, licit and ill, and identification as such for broadcast recordings, if the lacquer or later tape was made before transmission, off a direct line at the recording service, or after transmission. Oh, why do we know this field would be helpful here? And I have a tool in mind electronically to be able to at least approximate the answers to that question. Born Magnetic 1. Now the company assigned control number replaces the matrix number. Rupley includes them in his various company label discographies for classical recordings. Mike Gray's present and ongoing discographic work is a model. For master tapes and their directly descended derivatives, the chain runs from the unedited master to the completed edited individual selection to its placement within a track sequence. Helpful documents when researching this data include producer and editor's notes, as well as markings on the tape boxes themselves. Recent postings to the Ampex list went into great detail on the sequence and nomenclatures used by various recording companies in-house to describe master tapes and their derivative copies. Born Magnetic 2. This covers recordings copied to other media that were made from a master tape. They were marketed as LPs, 45s, CDs, and pre-recorded tapes. Entries should indicate if what the record contains is complete or altered, such as a 45 lacking a verse of the LP. Born Digital to be added. I'm still digesting various pre-conference workshop presentations. That's a way of ducking an interesting question. The catalog. Among the goals of the catalog are to identify the performance beyond question, then the specific edition. Each data frame must include those fields required to achieve this goal. Selecting the fields whose purpose is beyond this function that each user wants, their layout, and the order he wants them to sort is optional. There would be templates for screen content and arrangements using familiar data formats, such as the old library catalog card, that used by Brian Rust in his jazz discographies, that used by William Morin in his classical vocal ones, and if you want the data arranged by issue number, that by John Bolig in his series of Victor discographies. Many fields to hold this data are included in present professional cataloging schemes, but some are structured inflexibly and thus deny broader manipulation of this data. Expert sourcing. There is an ever-increasing pool of resources that list the output of specific record companies by recording date, matrix, and issue numbers, and or by issue number, informed by the compiler having had access to company files and or from other expert sourcing that offers a high degree of confidence. Name authority. A serious issue in all cataloging is that of the spelling of names. Professional library catalogers draw upon authority files, particularly those maintained by the Library of Congress. It is searchable online so you can get spellings so that you have uniform results when you search for a piece. What you cannot get are birth and death dates unless there is another identical name, not usually the case. Yet it would seem that that data would have to have been found in the process of researching the name. Example, my own right now for conductors in progress, which in addition to dates includes their official posts and periods of tenure. Among its purposes is to determine by their position at the time of a recording if they had the authority to customize the sound of the orchestra and thus represent their best presentation of their conception. Recording data. Most reference works dealing with the history of recording, and especially those closely focused on one company, have almost always been the result of cooperation among private researchers, often with access granted to them by the company's own archives. Excuse me. Now a shared process. We, the obsessed list makers and sound researchers, furnish much of the information that fits into the fields on the professional cataloger's screen. Collector scholars, independent of institutions within the field, abound. A large proportion are or were ARSC members, among whom there is a great deal of cooperation. Very little data about recordings relevant to this application has been the result of research supported by the academic community. An exception is the Victor Project being hosted by the University of California at Santa Barbara. The work of many, including some of my own past research, has been funded in part by NEH, where an institution may have been involved, in some cases primarily to administer the grant. Michelle Rupley's monumental label discographies had no outside support at all. There are other databases that contain much recording-related information, though they may be less official and or be in other languages. Expert compilers of these may have put them together in their own way, preparing them to be kept compatible with how the data frame will accept that information is a separate task. They should not be refused, however, but put into a quarantine pending examination of their accuracy and, when necessary, format conversion. Sources neglected. Every town has two or three music historians, one for doo-wop and the same or another for local rock and roll recordings. Yet another is the fellow who knows the history of all the clubs and stadia and who played there and when. These guys are usually off our radar, but are important. Now, the entry screen. Each user can design his own entry screen or choose one already formatted. For classical music, for instance, the screen can list all Beethoven fifths alphabetically by composer and conductor, and then the order in which each recorded them. By clicking on one, you can see as much of the catalog record as you have previously configured it to show. Date bases, composer birth dates, dates of work, completed, first published, first played. Performer dates, ensembles by date, of the makeup of specific personnel as well as the dates of individual members. String quartets come to mind, rock and roll groups or another group. Recording dates, contextualizing. When dates are in fields that allow simple calculation, here are some possible questions that can be answered. From databases, list all recordings of a work in the order in which they were released. How soon after the piece was written was this recording made? What were the ages of the performers at the time the recording was made? Is this recording identical to another? Who performed this music first? Who recorded this work first? Same work, same performer, different times during his career. Composer conducted. From databases, relationships, from research, very factual. Performer to composer to performer, commissioner of the work, dedicatee, creative, relative of the composer. The composer is an ensemble or band member. The composer was present. The composer coached the performers, went out for beer. The performer to the music performed. The edition editor. Was the producer or engineer related to any of the performers? Teacher, pupil, schools of singing, arrangers of jazz and dance band recordings. Culturally iconic at one time. Recent examples are Nessun Dorma and We Will Rock You. Chart history. Another kind of information requires listening. These can be added by the individual user or organization or from an external source on an accept, don't accept, item by item basis. Some tend toward the subjective and need to be closely defined to avoid skewing the goal of objectivity. Repeats, transpositions, cuts, interpolations, ornamenting the same music in different ways. Portamento, in-tuneness, historically informed performances. Can you believe what you hear? Editing, miking versus the balance the composer wanted. I have some firsthand experiences with that. Jazz, is a musician identified as part of an ensemble, featured in a musically significant way? Is a musician solo from the band's chart, or is it improvised? I'm sure you'll think of others tailored to your own interests. A set of abbreviations with mouse over, full-term definitions and explanations should be devised for the above and any other abbreviations and possibly unclear terms. And as I go through this, you can create links to anything you want in your head as we go along. A downloading service can supply packets of factual information as it is researched, compiled, configured, and approved, and sent to appropriate fields. Users can inspect it, refuse it, or add it. Surely folks in other more complex than the book disciplines are facing similar issues. Interaction with them would be essential. What I'm proposing is a resource that is a computerized structure with some of the characteristics of Wikipedia, as well as data derived by calculation, available to all, and so flexibly designed that each user can click on Add to My Collection to make his own catalog tailored to his own needs, drawn from expertly sourced information. It draws on the universe of data which professional librarians have gifted us, many years in the making. It is not limited to one country, one language, or one culture, but can be used worldwide. Addressing organizational issues, where ARSC fits into this picture, how the user gets this information, copyright matters, and financing are among future topics. I'm ducking all of that. Over 50 years ago, I gave a talk called What to Do with a Sound Archive After You Have One, probably the first such in the United States and possibly anywhere. I made comparisons using all the classical music-related relationship techniques I mentioned above. Andy's talk and others that follow at this conference make use of facets of these techniques. The data muscles that will develop as a result of implementing the suggestions I've made here will propel research using sound recordings and other non-book materials more deeply into the scholarly process and, who knows, may even enhance actual musical performances. At the moment, what I'm proposing may seem idealistic. 50 years from now, it will consider to have been inevitable. Thank you.
We have time for a few questions.
What I think is important, you've mentioned country of manufacture for pressings, but the materials that the record is on, shellac, solid, or laminated?
All of these are I'm cutting off only because I have not included everything. Believe me, this is very deeply cut. Okay. But I understand that you're
In home recordings and lacquer and everything, the manufacturer of the disc, the manufacturer of the tape, that is information which I think it's vital to me.
No, I agree with
and
you.
But it's something that I think should be at the head of.
I wouldn't put it at the head. I would leave it kind of to be added at a later date. There's a lot that has been left out.
It shouldn't have been left out.
No, I think it is not as crucial as you may think at the moment. There's a lot more going on here than this. Organizing this stuff.
Long-term existence of the item.
I won't argue the point any further. Has anybody else any questions or comments? Yes.
Yeah, there are pieces too that have, not talking classical music, of course, two English titles, like the Engel Cable Overture and the Hebrides Overture.
The answer to that and many similar questions is you establish one and you say, is this the piece you mean when you put in the other one?
Yeah.
And it'll take you right there, and then you can say, always do this, and then you don't have to do it every time.
So if you look up either way,
sure.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Is any of this software available now?
Absolutely not. But this is based in part on using lots of software in lots of other than musical applications. And it's all, I've shown it to a database expert, guy who works for one of the big national conglomerates. And he was perfectly happy. He says, yes, it can be done. It's a difficult job, but it's the way you laid it out. It should work. Yes, is that Robin back there?
Yes. Thank you, actually, Steve. Not so much a question, but a comment. From the academic side, as we're cataloging and creating metadata for these recordings, it's really interesting to hear what you find useful as a researcher. So maybe we can try to incorporate those things, even if we don't have a way of displaying that information.
I'm delighted that somebody's interested in doing that. Garrett, and then who's that back there? Oh, okay. Garrett?
I have a suggestion for a possible.
Oh, I'm sorry.
For this sort of catalog, the Internet Archive, because it seems like
I hope you're right, and it's something well to be considered. Garrett, you had a question? Well, this was a vision, as I stated early. So let's see where the vision takes us. Catlin, and then I think we have to...
There's one over
here. Well, I want to get Catlin in here.
I just want to bring everybody's attention to a project called DivFrame that the Library of Congress is working on. It's beginning to look at basically revamping MARC, and the repaired sound section has actually become involved up front, and we have been working on a contract related to data modeling, and we're doing a lot of what Steve was talking about. We're also bringing in issues related to digital content and structuring of different elements. So hopefully that will continue going forward, and I'm just very interested in DivFrame.org. I believe it's one of the websites that's also a Library of Congress site. And hopefully I can share things with this community as we make progress. But I'm excited about it because the important sound is involved up front, which is one of the points we're making. It's good to have some of the more complex materials dealt with up front with some of these structures. This one makes them work.
Yes, I've read through it, and it looks quite promising. I just had to say at the beginning that this was, regardless of what is going on elsewhere, in great part because a lot of what goes on elsewhere may suddenly stop. I hope that's not the case with your development.
I'm hoping not to. I just wanted to say one other thing really quickly. The goal is to put it out on the web and allow people to interact with it.
Good.
We got one over here.
Okay, sure. I really haven't thought it through in this context, but I should tell you that I once worked on an appraisal where the tape boxes and their annotations were critical, mm-hmm. And it involved a major politician and his in-house recordings.
Okay, thank you very much, Steve.